Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Also, you can watch the show on YouTube as well and take us on the go with the ESPN Chicago app. Download that app, take us wherever you go, and you can catch up on all the podcasts of all the shows, including ours. Just find the CDGA Golf Show tab. 312-332-3776 is the number if you want to get involved with us as well. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up North Michigan Golf without the drive. So Scotty Scheffler has had himself quite the year here in 2014. When you look at everything that he has done in 2024 alone, six of his 12 career wins have taken place. He is by far and away the top on the FedEx leaderboard as well. He's your number one player in the world. He's gotten a green jacket out of it. And for Scotty Scheffler, this is just, it kind of feels like business as usual. And oh, by the way, we discovered during the break as well, he's going to make $8 million this week without playing in an event.
Without
just because
doing anything.
This is when the points for the FedEx Cup, it all comes to a close this week. Scotty's not playing this week. But because he is at the top right now.
By a long,
yeah,
long
I mean,
way.
Think about it. Xander's won two majors this year, and Scotty still clears him by almost 2,000 points.
He could almost not play for like half a year and still be in the lead.
Rory McIlroy is in third right now and has well below half of what Scotty has. He's in third and has a little over 2,500. Scotty's almost at 6,000. That's the level of dominance that Scotty Scheffler is at right now. But yeah, almost 2,000 points more than the next best and Xander Schauffele. Anyway, so you put together his whole year, the gold medal, the green jacket, the five other wins that he has on the tour, including the players. I mean, it's just been a banner year for Scotty Scheffler, and it's just kind of what we've come to expect out of Scotty every single year. Now, I will say this. His major record this year was probably not as good as some people thought. Like, he struggled at the U.S. Open, which I think a lot of people wanted to see Scotty do a lot better there, because Pinehurst, that's a big boy course right there.
It is.
And for Scotty to play the number one player in the world to play that way, and it always kind of set up for him to struggle there. Very difficult putting course. We know that's Scotty's Achilles heel right now. So it kind of made sense, but that's where when you are talking about some of the greatest of all time, you want to see iconic wins at a place like Pinehurst. And for him to go 41st there, a little strange, but he wins the Masters. He wins the tournament after the Masters as well when he goes to the RBC Heritage. He wins the Memorial. I mean, it just felt like he just stacked all of these big-time wins and all of these big time venues and stuff like that. And then he has the PGA Championship where he finishes in a tie for eighth, but you got to remember everything that went into that. He's missing his caddy, Ted Scott, on Saturday. He gets arrested on Friday, plays a round that's probably purely based on adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
To finish in a top 10 there, super, super impressive. And then he finishes top 10 in the Open, but the Open kind of felt like one that he could have had, but he didn't enter that killer mode that we saw Xander really put himself into, where he came from behind to win. It always kind of felt like Scotty should have been that guy to come from behind and win, but he never got into that groove there. And then he goes out and wins the gold medal. I think it's going to be a pretty clear cut win for him for PGA Tour Player of the Year. Even though Xander has the two majors this year, I still think that the entire body of work that Scotty has put together is still going to go his way, because he's got the six wins. And even though the Olympics doesn't really factor into that, it still sits in people's minds.
Yeah, it does. And I think the only way you might even have a discussion whether Scotty's player of the year is if Xander goes on a run and wins every playoff event and wins the tour championship. And even then, I'm even not quite sure he'll win.
Well, at that point, I think what? Xander will have had 5 wins.
Yeah.
But and he lifts the FedEx Cup trophy, so I think then you have your case.
You have your case, but then I think the intangible is the gold medal.
Bing! Right.
I think it just makes the scale tip in his, although it doesn't technically officially factor in this, but it does.
Right.
It just does. But it's amazing. After Scotty won the gold medal, and we had the event up at the Glen Club, I was reminded again that, you know, just back in 2019, Scottie Scheffler was an absolute no-name to us. And he ends up shooting a 63 up at the Glen Club to win the Evans Scholars Invitational. And, you know, it was his first Web.com Tour victory. So in 2019, he goes on and becomes the Korn Ferry Player of the Year. The next year, he becomes the Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour. And then in 2021, he makes his Ryder Cup debut. And it's there, then he does well. He goes 2-0-1. And then he comes out in 2022 and ascends to number one, gets his first major title. Then he becomes PGA Tour Player of the Year. And then just continues the success in 2023 with a Players Championship, and then goes absolutely nuts this year. His decade is only getting better. And what's been amazing, he is now doing stuff that Tiger didn't even talk about like this with Tiger. Tiger dominated, but not like this. And if he continues to keep this up, wow. I mean, it's the future for Scotty Scheffler. It's really just up to him. It's how present and how hungry is he to want to go off and really make history and really become the greatest player the world has ever seen. I don't know if that's really in the makeup of him and who he is as an individual, like it was with Tiger. But if he decides to put his mind to it, it's going to be a fun decade to watch finish out.
Well, I think part of it too is what does it look like putting wise for him as well? Like, how is he going to attack some of these courses where putting is paramount, and you can't just be the great ball striker and rely on 24 to 30 feet worth of putts made for a round. Like, you have to go out there and put together a couple of rounds where you're making some 10 footers for eagle or 20 footers for eagle and stuff like that to really launch you past some of the rest of the competition there. But I mean, and I get it's a little bit skewed too because of the way that golf payouts are now, but the earnings record is like 2 years ago, what we saw John Rahm do, we thought, damn,
that won't be done again.
And little did we know, the next 2 years dominated by Scotty. And just the way that it's so much so that his caddy right now, Ted Scott, would be ranked 55th on the tour from earnings alone.
Wow.
He would be right on the heels of Jordan Spieth and Victor Hovland for earnings this year based on the estimates of what like a standard caddy cut is. And you know, the way that Scotty's played this year, Ted's probably gotten a little bit extra, and I'm sure he's getting a little chunk of this.
A few little bonuses along the way,
and I'm sure he's getting a little chunk of this $8 million coming his way too.
Oh yeah, so, I'm sure there's a little bit of, hey, if I win this, you're gonna get that,
and maybe it's not in the form of a check, but maybe it's in the form of like tangible goods as well. Like
hey, I got a brand new Escalade, or I've got a brand new house.
He's 50. He would be 55th. On earnings this year. Like, if you told us at the beginning of the year he would be right on the heels of Jordan Spieth and Victor Hovland right now for earnings on the PGA Tour, not Scotty, his caddy, is going to be right on the heels of that.
A caddy, Grandpa.
That's how good of a year he's had.
I know. And I don't know that Tiger ever dominated to this degree. And the thing that makes me scratch my head in absolute bewilderment is when I watch Tiger hit the golf ball and his swing and his mechanics. And then I go over and watch Scotty do the same thing. Scotty's like all over. His feet are flying and everything, but he does it the exact same way every time, and he doesn't miss. He's so good, but yet the swing and his footwork is so unconventional. But I don't know how he does it, but he makes it work every time, consistently. And I, in the back of my mind, kept saying for the last few years, there's no way that's going to be able to hold up under pressure. There's no way when the chips are on the line that he's going to be able to do this. Oh, was I wrong? My Lord. I mean, it's almost as if, is this the new thing? But it can't be. It can't possibly be.
No.
But
yeah.
It is. It's, he is so unique in so many different ways, and all very good, mind you, and maybe the most gentlemanly player out there. If there was a Lady Byng trophy and, you know, that they have in hockey for golf, I think he gets it. And he's just a great guy to love and a great role model for anyone and everyone.
You know, what's funny is we talked about, and you're talking about the feet here. We talked earlier about Tommy Fleetwood and how you talk about teaching tape. That's a guy who you go to golf tech. That's a swing you want to emulate.
That's right.
You can't use anything from this guy.
No.
Scottie Scheffler, I mean, how many times can you say the best player in the world, you as like someone, if you're trying to teach a young person how to golf, like if you're trying to teach a young person how to play basketball, you can go to YouTube, find LeBron, Steph Curry, all that stuff, and say, do that stuff. Because that's how you become a better basketball player. You can football. Watch Patrick Mahomes. Watch Josh Allen. Watch that stuff, because that's how you can become a better football player. Baseball. Watch what Judge and Ohtani do. That's how you become a better baseball player. You can't do that with Scottie Scheffler. You can't say, hey, go to YouTube, watch his swing, watch his mechanics, and copy that. You can't do that, because that kid, A, will hate the game after a little bit, and B, you're teaching them bad form. It's flat out bad form. And no, he somehow finds a way to make it work. And I wonder how his game is going to hold up over time with that form. But like you said, you didn't think it'd get to this point. I mean, and that's the number one player in the world?
Yeah.
By a landslide right now?
Landslide is the key word right there, too. He is. And as you said, I would pick 5-10 women or men to show anybody how to best swing a golf club before I'd pick him. Mm-hmm. But the results, I would love to show the results. How I would use Scotty in terms of teaching my student is his mannerisms, his ability and how he conducts himself on the golf course, his ability to not let anything faze him. His ability to commit, execute, and accept is by far number one on tour. He will accept that bad shot just like he accepted hitting it 3 feet. You can't tell. And that's the beauty of his mind. His mind is so strong. It just seems to be, because I don't know how else he's doing it. And certainly, you know, it's not through your basic mechanics. His mechanics are amazing for his body and how he works it. But it is not anything I would want to suggest that anyone try to emulate, because you are going to, like you said, you're going to hate the game, because you want to stay planted to the ground. Watch Tommy Fleetwood. Watch Tiger Woods swing the golf club. And that is really atypical how you want to do it. What Scotty is doing and how he's doing it just leaves me shaking my head every time in absolute amazement and bewilderment. But again, I just think Scotty is a great role model for all of us to aspire to conduct ourselves when the pressure is on and you're coming down the wire. You just can't tell how he's playing or how he's doing. He could be in last or in first. He just maintains the same level of emotion and just fire and that ability to just turn it on. And he's like a quiet assassin. He just goes about his business and gets it done.
Yeah, it's incredible. And the way that he does it in an unorthodox manner, you don't see stars like that in sports. Like, you see guys transcend the way that a game or a sport is played. But Scotty's, like, this is not something that's going to be taught. He's not transcending the sport in terms of results, But he's not transcending the sport in terms of a way that you go out and approach the game and practice and stuff like that. He's not transcending the sport in that way. And that's what is so puzzling about his success at times.
Right. And, you know, I think back to the Masters and the major that he won this year. And again, I'll put the Players' Championship in it because it's two-time. He wins it back-to-back. That, to me, is also – it's a major win of sort.
Right.
But when I was watching the Masters, I kept waiting for Scottie to blow up. Because I thought,
everyone else was.
Yeah, and eventually that swing – it's got to break down at some point, right? No, he's just going to go on and win the Masters by four over Åberg and yeah. Homa and Morikawa and Fleetwood.
And it's the most dominant major win that we've had this year.
That's right.
By strokes, yeah.
And I just kept waiting for the chink in the armor. Like, he can't possibly shuffle his feet the same way every single time under all that pressure and maybe on wet grass.
Yeah.
You know, Augusta grass. It just... But he does it. It's amazing. And because I really, honestly, because when the majors are exciting and they get good, and I just want more golf, so I'm always rooting for playoffs. I couldn't get one to happen for the Masters because Scotty wouldn't let it. But I was hoping that it would be the swing that physically wouldn't hold up under the duress because of how he moves differently than most. But he's just an amazing individual, and it's just fun to see. And I don't know if people really appreciate the fact that we might be watching history right in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
Like we were with Tiger, and we just don't know it yet.
Right. Six wins for him this year, half of his career wins all coming in the year 2024, plus a gold medal.
Yeah.
Plus a gold medal.
Basically, he did it like in 6 months.
Yep. 14 top 10 finishes, and by far and away your number one player on the tour. So much so that his caddy is making tour money.
and that's a career for almost anybody else that
yeah.
you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That would be a former, and that might actually get you into the Golf Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you're right. Like, a major and then a few more wins pile on top
hurts.
Of that. And, yeah, it's amazing what he's done. And guess what? The year's not even over yet.
No.
He still has, like, four events to play.
I mean, he could actually put down a bully beatdown in these playoffs. Like
yeah.
No other. If he goes out and wins a couple and then punches the clock with a tour championship on my way out saying, I'll see you guys in Montreal.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that the tour championship and the President's Cup are the two last things on the agenda for him, I'm sure. And then he shuts it down for a long winter nap, I guess.
Yeah.
Plays with his new child.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we will dive into some comments made by Phil Mickelson. Is a retirement on the way for Phil Mickelson? And what does it mean for LIV Golf as well? All that's coming up next. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up north Michigan Golf without the drive.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
You by Fox Bend Golf Course. We'll talk with Charlie Nikitas coming up in about 35 minutes from now. He is your winner of the 75th Illinois Open, local guy from Glenbrook South High School. So we'll talk to him coming up in a little bit. Plays college golf out at Miami, Ohio, and then
yes.
transferred down to Alabama. Roll Tide. So he had himself quite the collegiate career as well. So we'll talk with him in about 35 minutes. But this really caught my eye, and this, I guess, kind of has a bit of a local tie to it as well, because on a conference call discussing the individual LIV Golf Championships, which are going to be held locally at Bolingbroke Golf
yes,
Club,
sir.
Phil Mickelson discussed his future with LIV. And remember, Phil Mickelson is really the one that got LIV off the ground.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He was the one that brought credibility to it.
Uh-huh.
He's the one that I'm sure helped recruit others over. I mean, you're not going to see a lot of these other guys go over to LIV without Phil making the first leap there. And it kind of felt perfect for Phil, because I remember when we talked about it when it first happened, it was kind of like, It's a bunch of has-beens. But Phil at the time, he was a has-been, but he was not too far removed from winning the PGAs
exactly.
at the age of 50. And on top of that as well, it's still a, like, I mean, it's Tiger Phil. It's one of the two that LIV Golf was bringing over and making a part of sort of the marquee, the face of what they were. I don't know if you get guys like Brooks and Rahm and some of these big time and DeChambeau to go over if Phil isn't the one that makes that first leap over. So he was discussing earlier this week on Wednesday, talking about where he is, his state of his game. And he says, I see glimpses and my teammates see glimpses of me being where I expect to be able to compete at this level. But I'm also realistic with myself. And if I'm not able to, I'll step aside and let somebody else come on in and take the high flyers to new levels. He's opened the door for him for the retirement of his career, because after that, and listen, he's still able to participate in majors. He's basically going to go on the Tiger plan after that, where he'll play in majors and that's it. But Bolingbrook may be the last time you see him play in a quote unquote, like a tour type of event. It could come at Bolingbrook in about a month.
Without knowing it, they may have just sold more tickets because this could be the last time you see Phil Mickelson in competition anywhere in Chicago, because let's face it, I don't see any major championships coming back to Chicago anytime soon, or at least while Phil Mickelson's still trying to play competitive golf anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, Phil Mickelson was the poster boy for LIV. I don't know if Phil Mickelson's gambling issues that contributed to him going over, if those hadn't happened, I'm not sure Phil makes the jump. They tried to get Tiger to come over and offered him piles and piles of money. And he's
probably
still
close
said,
to $1 billion.
Yeah, close to $1 billion of those piles. Right. And Tiger, you know, didn't take the money. His legacy and what he was doing meant more to him than any of the dollars that the Saudis could come up with. Phil, on the other hand, different story. Didn't quite have the same decorated resume as Tiger, although a very good one at that. He's a Hall of Famer and one of the best to ever play the game. But he had financial issues. And I think the Saudis took advantage of that. And I think that this whole thing was built around Phil Mickelson's gambling issue that helped bring him over. And by bringing Phil into the mix, that then gave it legitimacy instantly, because he was just coming off of the win at Kiowa with the PGA Championship. And he gave it, to your point, instant credibility. Credibility that made the others give pause. Brooks Koepka, for example, and where he was at that point of his career, he wasn't sure he was even going to be playing actively anymore with the surgeries, the knee, the rest of it. So Phil gave it the credibility that allowed Brooks to go ahead and say, you know what, that might be the best thing for me right now.
Probably saved Brooks' career.
Right. So I think Liv
Bryson as well.
Rice. I, a lot of these guys. And Phil was the reason for it. And I think Father Time has never lost a battle. And he's still going to beat Phil Mickelson in that as well. And I think Phil's body and his ability to perform at the highest level is just, unfortunately, dwindling. It's just what happens to all of us as we get older. We're not as sharp. And what's more amazing than anything, it's not Phil Mickelson's tee to green game that's given him the issues. It's actually what he's known for.
Mm-hmm.
It's his short game. And when you're Phil Mickelson and you're not the same wizard that you are with the wedge and the putter, and I've seen Phil Mickelson now, I'll bet with at least 5 or 6 different styles of putters. When he was on his game, it was the same putter every single week for years and years and years. So I'm going through my own putting issues myself, and I think I got 6 or 7 of them right now in the trunk of the car. That's never a good sign, and Phil's the same way. It's which putter is he going to have, and how is he going to start making it work? What grip's he using? So his short game just isn't what it used to be 10, 20 years ago by any stretch of the imagination. And as a result, like we've always said, if the short game is there and you're having problems tee to green, it saves you. And if your short game's there when you are on tee to green, that's how you go low. It just seems Phil hasn't been able to execute either scenario. He is, I think he's ranked 44th right now on LIV, and that's not good.
Yeah.
That is not good. They don't have 150 players.
Like, what is it, like 50
it's
or
like,
something?
I think
or
it's 60? 50. I think it's a 58 or something like that. And, you know, some of those guys are like wild cards playing. You know, I mean, you're scraping the bottom of the bottom down
right
there. So being in the 40s in this is not good whatsoever. And quite honestly, there's a few others that came along with Phil that are basically in the same age bracket that probably are scratching their head. If Phil's thinking this way, maybe I should too. And when I say that, the likes of a Bubba Watson, who's ranked 51st. Ian Poulter, he's ranked 45th. Heinrich Stenson, 39th. How about Lee Westwood? He's 34th. Now, Lee Westwood's only 34th because he had an amazing strong finish at Nashville. Otherwise, he's well up into the 40s. Now, these are a handful of guys that have either won majors, we've seen on the Ryder Cup teams, or a combination of both. And I think Father Time is just winning. And I just think that, you know, as good as these players are, as young as they can be, golf is different now. Golf is becoming more and more in the last few years a younger man's game than ever, ever, ever before. I'm just amazed at watching at the amateur levels, the tournaments. And in fact, we were just talking about it last week at Fox Bend. They had a club championship out there. And in the championship flight, to get into the championship flight, a 0.7 was the cutoff. 0.7. I mean, that means they had like eight guys plus. That to me is telling me that people are getting so much better, quicker, and getting comfortable to competing at such a high level early on that I think we're starting to see the older generations starting to, you know, just age out, if you will.
Yeah.
And LIV is, the whole point of all this is LIV is now starting to go down a path of what happens next when we start right losing some of these names. Who do we go to next? So I think they're going to be facing some crossroads here in the near future that maybe they didn't think were going to be upon them as quickly as it is. And that's called some of our biggest names not performing like we thought they should or would.
Right. I think the interesting part of is kind of what you were saying there is where does LIV go? Because who do you recruit at right this point? You have to go younger.
Yes.
Unless you can get maybe like a Jordan Spieth who's dealing with all these injuries, yes, and go to him and basically say, look what happened to Brooks, look what happened to Bryson, and look where they are now. And when you don't have a certainty future-wise with what your league is going to look like when it's matched up with the PGA Tour, if it's even going to be merged together, how is that going to end up working out? All of it is it's a murky future for LIV, because you are going to start to see some of these guys phase out. The guys that you're going to bring in aren't going to have nearly the Q rating that the guys that are on the way out are going to have. What do you do? Because these guys aren't going to golf forever. You can't.
No.
I mean, at a certain point, you have to protect the integrity of the
That's
asset
right
from a on-course perspective. You have to have something worth showcasing. And when you, the best of the best, like every single time I look at a LIV leaderboard over the last year or so, I always kind of like, all right, where's Phil on this? Usually near the bottom.
Yep.
Usually near the bottom. That's just kind of the performance. And that's supposed to be your marquee guy. That's supposed to be one of the guys that brings your league credibility. And when he is putting forth the performances that he has and is hinting at this retirement as well from LIV, what do you have? And now you've built back up some of the careers of guys like Brooks and Bryson, and you got John Rahm as a big fish to come over as well. But what's your next move? I don't know what it is. I really don't. I think Spieth would be a big one, but what's why wouldn't Jordan Spieth have already made the move? That's the thing, is anyone, and you could have said this about John Rahm too, like, why would John Rahm make the move now? But it kind of feels like, why would anyone make the leap at this point? Wouldn't they have already made the jump over at this point?
You would think so. You really would. And I think more people would jump if the John Rahm scenario panned out a little bit better for John Rahm in terms of his results. But I think John Rahm walked into this thing with a bit of an agenda. And I think he had some things on his mind that he thought he could get past, pushed through, approved to make it 72 holes, getting their world ranking points. Mm-hmm. I think he was either led to believe or just felt in his heart of hearts that my personality, my stature can move the needle faster than mm-hmm. probably anybody else. And let's, you know, get this thing, you know, partnered up with the PGA Tour as quickly as possible. I think I'm that guy.
I mean, he thought he was going to go in there and basically be
dominate.
From a off the course standpoint, in terms of like a management standpoint, he probably thought he was going to go in there and be like LeBron.
Yes.
And be the one that pulled the puppet strings on how the league is run.
Yeah. And I think he probably had some of those negotiations or what was wink, wink. Yeah, we're going to give you all this money. And also you can make some decisions or guide us as to where the best path of live is for the next foreseeable future. The problem is it hasn't panned out anywhere close. And when he is now getting caught up making statements, oh, I'm still a part of the European Tour, when he just walked away, that rubbed a lot of people wrong. And I just think if he was able to go in and make some formidable change in relative short order, I think you would have seen a lot of people run. And I think Will Zalatoris would have run. I think Jordan Spieth would have run. I think there would have been a few others. And I think, you know, Victor Hovland may rethink things, you know, based on what he's going through.
Right.
I think they're there, but the problem is murky is the best word. It is murky, and it only got murkier, and I thought John Rahm would bring more clarity to the murkiness, and to me, it just got worse. It's kind of like when you think you saw your Titleist down there, and then you reach your wedge in, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you brought up all that crap in the water, and you're like, where did it go?
Yeah.
I lost it.
Right.
And now I can't find my ball. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that's what's happened to John a little bit with himself, thinking that, I thought by August I'd have certain things accomplished, and you know, this tour would be looking as such a, you know, for the future looking great. I'd like to think that I knew where Liv was heading and what was going to happen next and where these things had gone. I am more in the unknown and have absolutely no idea now than ever before. I just don't understand how and where this thing's going to finally come to an end.
Yeah, the silence is
not good.
I don't think it's a good thing that there you haven't heard anything about this merger in quite some time now. It feels like for the big majors and when Jay Monahan speaks, you get a little check in here or there, but you never get an answer.
No.
And I don't know where we're going with this. I've always been kind of skeptical about whether or not this thing's going to come together eventually, but It's certainly starting to reach a crossroads.
And I think the longer we go with this silence, it doesn't bode well for the future and these groups finally coming back together in a way.
It's bad for the sport, too.
It really is bad for the sport. And I'll go back to the TV rankings. I think people are just fed up with it. They're fatigued by it. They don't like it. I just think that people are over it. And I think they're also thinking a lot of these players are starting to get paid gobs of money that they don't deserve. And they're underperforming in the likes of a lot of those that went over to Liv. And obviously the main subject here, Phil Mickelson, leads the pack. And I think Phil went from the most beloved guy at Kiowa. God, he could have run for president of the United States, and I guarantee you win. But not now. He is like a pariah. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, people aren't as fond of as they once were. And it's really sad, quite honestly. But the best thing that could happen to Liv is that Phil finds the fountain of youth somehow, some way, and catches lightning in a bottle for a few majors, has a hot live season, and brings relevance back, or does something amazing at Bolingbroke. But yeah. If you want to see Phil Mickelson up front and close, you got that chance. But let's be honest, folks, this could be the last time you see Phil up in this regard anyway. Yeah. Maybe it might be a Champions Tour if he decides to go that route, if it ever comes to Chicago.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, the golf world did lose a legend this week. We'll discuss all of that and more. This segment has been brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Tour Edge, Tyler Aki and Mike Gilligan talking golf with you every single Saturday throughout the golf season. You want to join us, 312-332-3776. The golf world lost one of their Hall of Famers earlier this week when Chichi Rodriguez died at the age of 88. And I know, Mike, you probably saw a lot more of Chichi Rodriguez than I did, but one of the great, like, showmen of the sport, and I know you've got plenty of stories from the tournaments that you ran and stuff like that, and just your interactions with him over the course of your golfing life as well.
Well, Juan Chichi Rodriguez was, as you say, the absolute showman. I remember growing up as a kid, and you either got Sam Snead junior clubs or you got Chichi Rodriguez's, you know, and my brother had Chichi's, and I was always jealous of the fact that he had the Chichi clubs. But he was the guy that would take the sword out and pretend he slayed the bull after he made a key birdie putt. But he used to do, instead of that, he used to throw his hat. He used to wear like a fedora and put it over the hole every time he'd make a birdie putt. And the reason he did that was because in Puerto Rico, he's playing in a tournament, a professional tournament. He made a birdie. The ball went down into the hole. And the moment it fell down in the hole, ball popped out with a frog. And he didn't get credit for the birdie. Because in the rules of golf, he has to play the shot over again. Because the ball never came to rest. So he started doing that. And the man was just the most enjoyable man to watch. He always had a smile on his face. Made a lot of people happy. You know, he won here in Chicago in 1964 at the Western Open. And as a kid, I used to go out to the Western Open at Butler National every year. But when he won the 64, he actually won it at Tam-O-Shanter, which is over in Niles, yeah. Which now is only a nine-hole track.
Course, yeah.
But he won the 1964.
You know what's funny is Tam-O-Shanter's course has come up probably three times to me in the past, like, week and a half.
Yeah, it's got a lot of history.
Yeah.
And then he actually almost won at the 65, but Billy Casper beat him out and he won second place. But in 1984, I went to the Western Open when it was at Butler, and it's always held around the 4th of July era timeframe weekend. And we would, during the early 80s, we seemed to always get a lot of rain for a period of years during this time. And there was a weather delay at Butler, and we were at the range, and Chichi was holding court, cracking everybody up. And he finally says to the crowd, "Watch this." He puts down two golf balls side by side up on tees. And with his driver, takes two very quick swings. He slices the first one, but he hooked the second one. And out about 235, 40 yards out, they collided. Wow. And he guarantees he can do it within three tries. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And when I talked to him afterwards, he said, "It's real simple." He said, "When I slice the first one, a slice takes longer to slice than a hook takes to hook. So the hook catches up to the slice." Now, how you even begin to start practicing this, right, let alone execute it? But Chichi did it. And I was there and saw it with my own two eyes. And still to this day, I have yet to see a greater trick shot than the one that Chichi Rodriguez performed at Butler National back in 1984. Rest in peace, Chichi. You were a great one, and you will be missed.
That is incredible. Like, I can't even think, practicing that, but the timing and the control of the golf ball to execute a shot like that.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, think about it. People lost their minds. It was Ludwig at the Open when he hit a ball on the green.
That exactly.
Like he didn't run it into one. He landed it on a ball, and people were like, "Oh my God!"
I know.
But to see a guy be able within three tries,
yes,
and hit two balls that he shoots consecutively.
Bang, bang.
And they collide in midair. About how far? And you said what?
About 200. I mean, I would guess it'd be about, it wasn't like 280 or anything. It was like about a little over 200 yards. Yeah,
like to get them to collide at that point and you just see them split off like that. That's unbelievable.
That gives you the idea of just how good these guys can control and being masters of the club face, the angle, the spin. It's truly extraordinary. And Chi-Chi, that's the best word I can come up with to describe Chi-Chi. Extraordinary. And he was an extraordinary man.
Unbelievable. All right. When we come back, we'll take a look at what's taking place out at the Wyndham Championships and kind of give you what's important, because a lot of guys have a lot at stake this week as it's the final stop before the playoff. So we'll do all that when we return. This segment has been brought to you by Tour Edge.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Wyndham Championships are underway for round three today. It may be Sunday, and maybe they're just accommodating for us. They know that we're usually there for the Saturday rounds, round three, and the weather decided to cooperate. But the Wyndham Championship taking place down in Greensboro, North Carolina. It's funny, I flew into Greensboro last year. By the way, this segment brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka. And you get to the airport, you start walking out, and you go towards like where the baggage claim area is, and there is just, I mean, they love this championship down there in Greensboro.
They do.
It is everywhere. There's like an entire wall. Like usually at O'Hare, like you get to that baggage area, and it's like, Chicago, we're happy you're here, happy to have you. No, this is home of the Wyndham Championship, Greensboro, North Carolina. They love it down there. But your leader right now is Cameron Young, a co-lead alongside Matt Kuchar after Cameron birdied one. Max Grazerman and Chad Ramey at 11 under, Aaron Rye and Billy Horschel at 10 under. You may notice that there is a name that is no longer 10 under, and that is Bo Hostler, who has had himself two completely different rounds.
Yeah.
He opens things up on technically Friday. And fires a 60. He was on 59 watch for that round. And then he comes back the next day. And what does he do? He shoots even par, 70. Yeah. So 60 to 70. He was 10 under after one round. And now he sits where he is right now. He has bogeyed once today already. He bogeyed number two. So he is 9 under for the tournament and has fallen back to 7th.
Well, you know, you mentioned Bo Hostler, and to your point, yeah, he was on 59 watch, and he shot 60 with making a bogey.
Yeah.
Making a bogey on 11. Not
28 on the front. 28 on the front. He opened his round, birdie, 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 eagle.
Yeah.
And found one more birdie the rest of the way on that front as well. But then, yeah, he opens the back. He goes birdie, bogey, birdie, par, birdie, birdie, and then par is the rest of the way. To get that 60 with a bogey, I mean, we've seen a lot of low rounds this year, too. Like, this had the feel of like a 59 type of round, because you usually have to go bogey free. But Cameron Young has done it once this year, and we've had another one as well. And then Bo Hostler was knocking on the door of it. And we don't see many of these sub 60 rounds, but they're starting to become a little bit more prevalent now.
They are. And again, it goes to show you just how good these guys are. Breaking news, Matt Kuchar just birdied number one out of the box. Mm-hmm. So he now takes the lead at 13 under. And Matt Kuchar's an interesting guy. Talk about guys on the outside looking in as it relates to the FedEx playoffs that are going to be starting next week. Matt Kuchar has to win this tournament to get in. He's currently, I think, at 155th on the list. So to break into the top 70, he's got to win. And that's the only way. A second place does him no good. It's like getting fourth in the Olympics. His season will be ending if he does not win this week. So obviously he's playing with a different mindset. But at the age of 46, I got to tell you, this guy's made 17 FedEx ever since this thing was created. I think he's the one player that's made every single playoff, and that streak is at risk today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
But right now, he's off to a nice start. So,
Adam Scott had the major streak,
yes.
So this is kind of like the he got in through the back door as well to the Open. So maybe Matt Kuchar can slide his way into a first-place finish here and get his way into the FedEx Cup playoffs here. A couple other things. Luke Clanton, the amateur from Florida, he is off to a scorching start today. He's 5-under through 6 right now.
So that's so goes to show,
We may, like the golf course. And he's 5-under through 6 with a bogey. He's got a bogey, two eagles, two birdies, and a par.
And once again, and I've been around golf for quite a long time. I just don't remember PGA Tour guys starting out this hot, this quick. I mean, 6-under through 5, 5-under through 6. I mean, and birdie.
And we see it once around, if not once a week. We see it once around, it feels like, these days.
And
as long as the weather's cooperating.
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't like they had, you know, they're putting it on a tee and, you know, putting their hand all over the ball. They're doing this just being who they are. It's amazing. And again, you know, Max Geisserman, okay, he shot 60 yesterday. Who's he? I mean, but obviously he's got skills to do that. But it also goes to show you, when you go back to Bo Hostler, you fire that low number. That's a good thing. The next day, though, I've always struggled trying to come back and have some normalcy, because you get caught up thinking, oh, God, by this time I was already 3-under. I'm just even par. And now you feel like you're pressing to try to make things like it was yesterday instead of sticking to the process. And I think Bo has gotten himself out of the process a little, like he had it locked in on day one. And already to start today, he's already made a bogey. So, yeah, it just goes to show you can shoot that low round, but it even affects the biggest stars and the best players in the world find it difficult to put two of these together, because it's just really hard to do.
I mean, it's funny, too. Like, his round on Friday is kind of the old adage of, you can't win on the first round, in the first round, but you can lose.
Oh, yeah.
He shoots 60, round one, out of the gates. You think this thing's over. Which, by the way, he only had a two-stroke lead after firing a 60, by the way.
That's the other thing.
Billy Horschel was right on his tail, and Billy Horschel's ahead of him right now. Horschel is 10-under, and you've got Bo Hostler at 9-under right now. So you cannot win necessarily on the first day, but you can lose, and Bo Hostler kind of learning that no matter how good that first round is, you have to stack these rounds together if you really want to, because he's not going to win in all likelihood at this point. Like, the way that that first round went so well, everything was so perfect, and then the next day to shoot 10 strokes worse and go not just 10 strokes worse, but you're 10 strokes worse and you shot even par for the day.
Yeah, and yet you're still in it, but yet you're not feeling real good about it.
You're almost outside the top 10.
I know. I want to ask Charlie, how low has he ever gone, and what was that like for him to come back on the next day?
Yeah, Charlie Nikitas will join us next. He won the 75th Illinois Open, played locally here at Glenbrook South High School, then went on to Miami, Ohio, and Alabama to play his collegiate golf. So we will talk with Charlie Nikitas coming up next. The segment has been brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.